news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right? All right!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Hey, wait, there's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 171, monster movie from 1959, the giant Gila monster, or if you will, Gila monster.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've gone through my entire life on this planet
not knowing how to pronounce
exactly.
Gila.
Exactly. I always thought this movie was a giant Gila monster. And when we were banging about ideas for what movie to discuss on this week's edition of Really Awful Movies Podcast, I believe I suggested the giant Gila monster, which is what I assumed, wrongly, that it was pronounced as, because, you know, it starts with a G, right? So it's a sort of fair assumption. Mm-hmm. But what do they say about assuming?
Makes an ass out of you and me.
And I was made into an ass, because as it was often repeated in this movie, if you can even barely call it a movie, this is a giant Gila monster. Hmm. So despite the fact that it starts with a G, it's like, I don't know, what other words start with G and have an H sound? There must be one or two.
Guantanamo Bay?
Yeah. I always call it Guantanamo.
No, it's what?
It's Guantanamo?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, why do they always call it Gitmo?
Because that's an Americanism. Okay. They just shorten it, yeah.
What about...
But there's a Baja California where it's B-A-J-A.
Okay, do we call it Guacaboli or...
Oh, it really depends on the... Oh, maybe I'm totally wrong. Guantanamo Bay, Guantanamera. Neither of us knows how to speak Spanish, so we're completely ignorant on this
front. I think either if you're Spanish or if you're a pretentious American news announcer, it would be Guantanamo Bay. But most of us call it Guantanamo Bay.
Okay. Huh.
And this one, I think most people do refer to this movie as the giant Gila monster, but it is the giant Gila monster. All the same, title is a bit of a misnomer because it's not really of a monster, nor is it really that giant.
Nor is it a Gila monster because it's actually a bearded lizard. That's just the technical zoology behind it. But it's funny, like I approached you or vice versa saying, well, let's do a monster movie. And then we were thinking, okay, Ray Harryhausen, King Kong type.
Stop motion.
Yeah. Oh, like a Godzilla, monster. But this heavy. Is not a monster. It's just...
This is just a lizard. This is a garden variety lizard.
Yeah.
And as you said, they did use a Mexican bearded lizard. Why they call it bearded lizard? I don't know. There's no beard. Is there?
I think it might have a beard, but at least it's in the same family as the uh-huh. Gila monster. I think they're very related. They're both poisonous reptiles in the southwestern Americas and Mexico. So it's not like they're way off base trying to pass off an iguana or an iwana. I don't know how to pronounce it as a Gila monster.
But this is a monster movie in the sense that you have a giant member of the animal kingdom terrorizing a town. But God bless them. This was a drive-in feature directed by Ray Kellogg. No relation to the cereal company.
No.
Who also directed The Killer Shrews, which played on a double bill with this one. So he actually had a double bill with two movies, The Killer Shrews and The Giant Gila Monster. And, you know, there's lots of movies like this. I mean, another one would be, let's say, Attack of the Crab People, where they want to create the illusion of a giant member of the animal kingdom attacking a populace, and they go through the trouble of using, you know, for lack of stop
paper
motion,
mache and wheels.
Yeah, and they use
the
miniatures
crab.
And they use extreme close-ups. And sometimes it's oddly convincing, like, for example, Them, the giant ant movie. But in this one, it's so non-convincing. It's hilarious. It's like watching a kid who has a pet lizard making home movies. And that's just a lizard attacking scenes, because all the framing scenes around it are pretty funny, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because this was made 1959 was when it was released, probably shot in 1958. And this was when youth culture was starting to come into prominence. So you had hot rod culture, you had JD culture, juvenile delinquent. Hmm. And what we got here is a group of teenagers, hot rodders, maybe even JDs, but these were the most genial juvenile delinquents in the history of cinema.
And like the
Fonz. Should I say genial?
Yeah, yeah. And like the Fonz in Happy Days, they have sort of a leader who's not really age appropriate when it comes to the demographic he's hanging out with. And this would be Chase Winstead, who really, he seems way more their senior than he's an established, I guess, professional. He runs a garage, and the rest of his compatriots are college, or what are they, high school? Who are these people? Like, I think high school. And he's their leader, and they're in this small Texas town. And I've, from what I've read, this is an incredibly accurate depiction of small-time life in Texas.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, we have to establish that within the geographic region of this unnamed Texas town, there are bleak, desolate regions where no humans ever go and no life is ever seen.
Yeah.
Well, stands to reason. If no humans ever go there, how can they ever see
life?
Yeah. And this is where the quote-unquote giant Gila monster resides. But before we get to the monster, we have to learn a little bit about our protagonist. And yes, we have Chase, what's the last name again?
Winstead.
Chase Winstead.
Yeah.
Sounds like a, I don't know. Like
a, yeah, upper crust, Connecticut, blue blood type guy. Chase Winstead at your service.
But before we meet Chase Winstead, we meet a couple out on a date, getting a little amorous. And they are Pat and Liz. And when they're out there, and I believe they go out to this desolate region.
Yeah, make out point kind of thing, yeah.
And unfortunately, their ménage à deux is interrupted by a giant claw, which knocks their vehicle off
down
of the...
Down an embankment.
Down
yeah,
an embankment.
And they're finished.
Very unconvincing. And they are the first victims of the giant Gila monster. Cut to a soda shop run by a gentleman with a very unfortunate name of Spook. This is a movie that came out in the 50s.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is pre-civil rights, and it's a white proprietor, but Spook, very inappropriate name. And this is a soda shop. This is where kids go to put some money in the jukebox, cut a rug.
I like you're reminding it there.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Great for radio.
So yeah. Twist, yep. And drink Sody Pop.
Sody Pop.
Yes.
Yeah.
As a local drunk.
Old Man Harris.
Old Man Harris.
Yeah,
almost
yeah.
like a precursor to Crazy Ralph of Friday 13th. Although he's not a harbinger of doom. But yes, Old Man Harris comes in there and goes, I want to taste some of your Sody Pop, Spook.
Yeah, talking about the ride, he's repurposed, and he has this great line about, oh, he's just full of folksy wisdom, and he has some line about New York City and getting married, and both of which you want to do once, but you wouldn't want to do twice. Like, he's just full of like
actually,
hillbilly charm.
I wrote down that exact line that you just mentioned. Buying a car is
I see. That's
just like getting married or going to New York City. And then he follows it up by saying, everyone should do it once, but no one should do it twice.
Yeah, yeah. And everyone just chortling and laughing away at this guy. What he's doing in a Sody Pop shop, drinking malt or whatever with a bunch of ostensible teenagers is never explained. But I think he has some connection to, is it the Beverly Hillbillies or one of these kind of hillbilly type shows? So he's just brought in as like the toothless wonder who's there to... It's comic relief, essentially, and how successful he was, we'll leave that up to you.
Yeah, this is a guy who, of course, he's a town drunk, and when he's detained for public drunkenness, he demands to take a sobriety test.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and another character of note is Chase's girlfriend, a French exchange student. Why did they have to have a French character in this movie? I don't know. A girl with a very thick accent by the name of
Lisa, or something like that. Yeah, and she was just barely comprehensible. She had a guardian under whose auspices she had to operate, and if she committed any sort of misconduct, then she would either be sent back to France, or she would have to become, if she wanted to stay with Chase, a ward of the state, which I thought was hilarious. Like, she would have to get another guardian in order to stay in. Like, how old is she? Like, I thought once you turn 18, you're a legal adult, but so these were different times.
I guess we would assume she would be 16 or so.
But they all, with the hairlines alone, they all looked like pushing 25 in the kind of Beverly Hills 90210. Like,
and this girl's accent is so thick that when she refers to her boyfriend, Chase, she calls him Shay. Che Guevara.
Okay. Che Lounge.
Yeah.
Chase Lounge.
So all these kids are obsessed with wheels. They're all into hot rodding culture and souping up their vehicle. This is a podunk town. There's only one law enforcement agent in the entire town, one sheriff. And when Chase sees his new squad car, he has designs on souping it up.
Yeah, yeah. Because his side business is that he listens in on the CB radio, and he goes to crash scenes that police also investigate, and that's what his side business does. So he's an auto body repair type guy, and he goes out on the call. So when cops go somewhere or first responders, there's an accident, he's there. Mm-hmm. And the whole film really revolves around this goody two-shoes, fantastic Chase, and the character is so funny.
Chase and the sheriff as well. Yeah. And it's hilarious because Chase ostensibly was modeled after, I say, maybe a James Dean or even Elvis. He very much is a poor man's Elvis.
He really is.
As seen later on this movie. And so you would think he would have some sort of, like, you know, juvenile delinquent qualities, being a hot rodder and so on and so forth. But him and the sheriff have the most genial.
I want to say it as well. Genial.
Genial, yeah.
Relationship, yeah.
Youth law enforcement official relationship in the history of cinema. These two are on the case from the minute that Pat and Liz don't come home, and of course there's a businessman that gets murdered by this ridiculous looking monster, and they're on the case together. They're going to find out who is responsible, or what is responsible for these disappearances.
Well, he's not so much Chase as he is maybe Chased. Like, I don't know, he's the best guy ever.
Well, he's God-fearing, as we will find out.
He's God-fearing, he lost his father in a mining accident of some sort, or I forget what kind of mishap, so he's basically helping his mother raise his young sister, and this is just so great. I think she might have been afflicted with polio, but I'm not sure. She's wearing crutches that were supplied to her by girlfriend Lisa, the French woman, and he's just looking after her and singing to her and doting on her and helping his mother. He's
spending all his money to buy her new braces. and this, I don't know if this is to add some pathos to the character, to add some sympathy. I don't know what it is, but there is a very funny scene where he says that he wants to spend all his money on buying new braces for his afflicted sister, and then he comes home and he finds out that she's this annoying little brat, that she has a new pair of braces, and they were purchased by Lisa. And she's like, oh, Chase, let me show you what I can do. And she wants to walk, and she only makes a couple steps before falling. So in order to soothe her wounded heart, Chase serenades her with a song. And this song, which he plays on the ukulele, and this is why I call him a poor man's Elvis, because he does break into tune, and this song is one for the ages.
Oh my God. It's been referred to variously online as, I think, the Mushroom Song, or Laugh, Children, Laugh.
Yeah, the Lord said, Laugh, children, laugh.
I'd like to hear a song. There was a mushroom, sad little mushroom. There was a meadow, ready to cry. There was a sparrow, gray little sparrow. There was an eagle, silent and high. And the Lord said, laugh, children, laugh. The Lord said, laugh, children, laugh. The Lord said, laugh, children, laugh. The Lord said, laugh, laugh, laugh. Then the Lord, he said, I created for you a world of joy from out of the blue. And all that is left to complete the joy, just the laugh of a girl and boy. Yeah, yeah. was a garden, beautiful garden, held in the arms of a world without joy. Then there was laughter, wonderful laughter, for he created a girl and a boy. And the Lord said, oh, laugh, children laugh, the Lord said, laugh, children laugh, the Lord said, laugh.
Yeah, and it's your standard gospel tune repurposed for this. It really makes zero sense. And to his credit, the actor who played Chase Winstead, what was his name? Dan Sullivan?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. He actually wrote all these tunes himself, but as was the style of the time, they wanted to have kind of a matinee idol in the lead who had designs on a music career, and which this character did, or this actor did, my apologies. And he had all his songs inserted into the movie, and this is a hot rod, rock and roll, sock hop, platter party, monster movie. So it's infused with all types of 50s culture and rock and roll. And one of the key characters in it is a guy who runs his car into a tree and is rescued by Chase. And he's a local DJ, as luck would have it. And he's Steamroller Smith, the DJ, and
the DJ, he's the king of the DJ.
The king of the Texas rockabilly rock and roll scene. And just the amount of drinking and driving in this movie is beyond the pale. But he sleeps off his drunkenness after he's towed, I think, by Chase to his auto body shop. The guy is actually sleeping in the guy's auto body shop and wondering actually how he got there. So it was, an amazing way they depict DUI culture in this film.
So we have Chase and we have his group of friends, the teens, what have you, but this is ostensibly a horror movie, a monster movie, so ultimately it comes down to a rampaging lizard.
Yeah.
So in many ways it's sort of like a Scooby-Doo type thing where the sheriff and Chase have to team up to find out what has become of Pat and Liz, what has become of this businessman that has disappeared, and there's a lot of discussion about skid marks. I've never heard the word skid mark depicted so many times in a movie. It's not a German pornography film.
Yeah, I think there was like a tow job or something, like there's some, which was towing a vehicle and not some sort of weird sexual practice. So yeah, between that and the spooks and just the strange terminology that's since gone on to, you know, have a different connotation. This is really, hilarious, hilarious film.
Because every time the monster attacks somebody, they're usually on the road, and when they're investigating it,
the skid marks are running parallel to the road. Something must have knocked the car ajar into the ditch or whatever. Right. Yeah,
and like I just said before, the word skid mark must have been, or the
makes
term
me laugh
skid
every time. Yeah.
It must have been repeated at least 30 times in the movie.
Because I'm a 13-year-old boy.
It's, I was going to say, it's where our head is at, as far as humor goes. But every time I heard the word skid mark, I just had to laugh. But let's talk a bit more about this monster, the titular monster.
The titular monster in question is fairly underwhelming. And what you're left with is basically cutaway shots of the monster in a hilarious fashion where it takes out a train, which is clearly a toy train. I didn't notice this, but apparently IMDb critics said there was a string pulling the toy train. So that you're meant to believe that this monster is like 10, 20 meters long, enough of a length and size to be able to derail a train. Absolutely hilarious. And of course there's a de rigueur scene where the sheriff consults with a zoologist and figures out that this thing could have grown to unimaginable size. Mm. And Chase says to him, why are you telling me this? Well, it's because, this is what I believe is what's causing all this calamity in town. And really the body count is fairly low, train accepted, but pre-train it's your poor Pat and Liz who are knocked off the embankment. This businessman whose suitcase they find. Yeah, traveling salesman. Mm-hmm. Hilarious. They find the suitcase, and again, Chase becomes involved somehow. Like he's an SVU detective analyzing the contents of the suitcase and what the victim left behind. But really, pre-train, not much of a body count. It's more based around the hot rod scene and these people. Very little, mm-hmm. very sparing use of this monster.
And Most of the time in movies such as these, they always attribute why these monsters are so enormous. Mm. And it's usually attributed, especially in the 50s with the atomic scare and whatnot, yeah. to radiation. Now, in this movie, there was a different explanation given. I don't recall what it was. Do you recall?
No, I don't.
It was something very pat and just very... yeah. It was just glossed through
yeah.
very, very quickly. So we really don't know why this monster is so big.
Yeah, and I remember one scene as well where they said that because of hormonal changes and random, I guess, just genetics and mutation, one of the characters cites, oh, did you hear about the Ukrainian or Russian baby that was born
at
like
50
pounds? It's like, no, I didn't. And that's hardly...
I haven't heard about that baby. Yeah. That baby must be a giant now.
Eric,
a giant when it was born, yeah. so...
That sounds like definitive proof. So, yeah, it was hilarious.
Mm-hmm. And ultimately, this film climaxes at a, I don't know, a house party, a sock hop? What do you want to...
Yeah, a barn dance. Well, what they call... And I actually Googled this because... I'm researching because there was a band, and I can't remember. Maybe you will be able to help me with this. In the 1560s, called the Platters, who had a bunch of hits.
In the 1560s?
In this...
Or the 50s or 60s?
The 50s or 60s, sorry. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and the Platters, and I didn't even... It seems obvious now because a platter is just like a plate laid mm-hmm. out on a table, but right. I had Googled it, and a platter is obviously... Well, not obvious to me, but it's slang for a record. And so you put on the platter.
Place the platter on the turntable. Or,
yeah, the platter party. Platypus party, whatever. Platter and again, with this ridiculous DJ.
They get the king of the DJs.
Yeah, and he hosts this inane party.
And this guy could not look more square.
Yeah, he looks like a... Yeah, like
he's there in his suit and his tie.
Yeah, like a PricewaterhouseCooper accountant right. or something.
And he's putting the platters on the turntable.
And he goes, hey kids, I got this new hit you guys might like. Yeah. It was just introduced to me at the radio station. Can you tell me who the singer might be? And he puts the record on and they say, hey... Is it one of the Everly Brothers? Is it, I don't know, Eddie, what's his face? Eddie Cochran. is it Elvis? No. Guess who it could be? It's a record cut by our very own
Chase
Winstead.
Yes.
And then everyone gives him a round of applause because he's a budding musician. And, well, and I got to say, too, like, this is ridiculous. Because just because the guy's a DJ, does he really have his pulse on everything that's going on? Because as soon as the record touched down, everyone was just going crazy and mm-hmm. dancing to it. I mean, surely there's music that people don't like. And just because it's, like, he says it's good, they are immediately just going nuts to it.
He puts the part down and goes, let's go, everybody.
Yeah.
Snap on the fingers yeah. and everybody's... Right away, they
cutting
might not
the
have song, they might not have ever heard the song before, but they're dancing.
All the round hounds were just dancing like yeah. crazy.
And then, to make it even better, Chase Winstead's in the house, and he reprises this ridiculous song.
Not in whole, luckily. And it's a mushroom song.
But this is not a secular song. This is mm-hmm. about the Lord, and the Lord said yeah. this and that. And
it said laugh. So yeah, children laugh.
Yeah, everything about this movie is very square. Laugh. And also very lame. And like, as I said before, the monster could not look more lame. There are ways that you can convincingly shoot a regular sized animal, and with the use of forced perspective or miniatures or whatever in camera trickery, make it look somewhat imposing. Sometimes in movies, it does not look convincing at all. I mean, you could have your Incredible Shrinking Man, or you could have your Food of the Gods. This one is just extremely unconvincing.
I was going to say, a new appreciation for even Night of the Lepus, with the similarly rendered giant, in quotes, rabbits, mm-hmm. where you're just leaping over these very, very tiny trenches to make them appear larger than life.
There was not one frame where I was convinced that this was anything more than your garden variety Mexican bearded lizard.
Or that the lizard was even in the same vicinity as any of the victims. They're so separated that there's just no amount of suspension of disbelief to... And funny, when it comes down to the denouement, where they're at the barn dance and the thing pokes its head through this paper mache, tiny rendered barn. It was just absolutely... asinine. But I had a question for you before we get to what we learned, because the explosive nitroglycerin
plays a
particularly strong role here. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, because there's one of the characters, oh, what is his name? He runs a shop.
Mm.
And he had ordered a bunch of nitroglycerin.
Well, to soup up the cars. And,
oh, that's what it was.
Yeah,
oh,
I see. Like in Fast and the Furious.
It's
to give the car a boost.
Oh, yeah. I see. Okay.
And it's hilarious because, yes, I guess we're going to kind of spoil it, but that nitroglycerin is what contributes to the Gila monster's downfall. Now, Case and Liz have to go and procure this extremely unstable...
Substance.
And...
it's generally used for dynamiting or like removing rocks.
And I mean, there was a movie called "The Wages of Fear," which was remade by William Friedkin, called "Sorcerer." And this was a movie that was fraught with suspense about truckers that had to transport nitroglycerin from point A to point B without hitting any bumps, because it's notoriously volatile and it will explode in a second's notice. And here you have Chase and Liz grabbing the nitro, taking it to the car, speeding off like a bunch of demons. She's told, because she's holding four canisters of nitro, and is told, don't let it hit. But yet, they're driving on bumpy roads. There is no way that nitroglycerin could not have blown. But it didn't blow. And they basically, I guess to spoil this movie, spoiler alert,
vanquish the creature with this explosive, chemical here.
Mm.
So what did we learn?
Well, what I learned is lame monster notwithstanding, this is a sort of a fun, charming movie. It's a nice time waster, and I could see it being entertaining on a drive-in double bill back in the 50s. You got to remember, these movies were not movies that people would watch intently to analyze, to examine the mise-en-scene.
Yeah, to interrogate and scrutinize. Yeah, that's more for us to do in
retrospect. These are for kids to go and just kind of park their car and make out, and then every so often glance at the screen, and oh, there's a lizard, and that's the end of that. But one thing this movie did have that I thought was rather effective was something that you hear in a lot of my favorite sort of cheesy 50s and 60s horror movies, is the use of the tom-tom on the soundtrack. There's a lot of that to create suspense.
Hmm.
Bum, bum,
bum,
bum,
bum, yeah.
Bum. With some use of a theremin as well. So this movie had a very interesting soundtrack. Not one for the ages. And some terrible pop songs by...
Yeah.
What was the actor's name again?
Oh, my God. It's escaping me now. But yeah, they all penned by himself. And it was incredible that your critical antenna was able to pick up the theremin. Because I did not notice that. Mm. Really cool. What I learned is that if we were to play a giant Gila monster drinking game, you could take a swig every time you heard the word say there, fella. All right, here you got this new hot rod, this deuce, this souped up deuce. Hey, round hound, say, you want to have some sody pop? Everything was prefaced with a say, and it's just funny of these stylistic quirks and just how fluid language is, and just all these expressions have just disappeared into the ether. And on our podcast, we tend to avoid popular vernacular terms, and I think we just like to articulate our points as best we can, and we don't use any au courant slang of any sort, because nothing dates you more quickly than calling someone a round hound.
Mm.
Or say, and oh, I'm gonna let's soup up your deuce and all this. Like, this is a quintessentially 50s movie.
So you're saying that our podcast is not on fleek?
Yes. Oh, I'm completely befuddled. But no, I'm saying our podcast is timeless.
But
it will not be dated.
Okay. But it's funny you say that, because, 1 year ago, YOLO was all the rage.
Oof, yeah, that's bugbear of mine.
That was
sickening.
That was
you only live once. Yeah,
by
Torontonian
Drake.
Yeah.
And now, nothing will date you more, make you seem more not with it than saying the word YOLO.
I'm just trying to, I'm thinking of Abraham Simpson. Mm-hmm. Whatever I was with, I'm now against, or whatever that speech he does about disco and his sideburns, and
But what's so funny is that for about, 3 months, you could not go anywhere without hearing YOLO, and people actually went so far as to get YOLO
tattoos.
That's something that they obviously aren't regretting today. But then again, hey, you only live once, so you might as well get yourself
exactly.
YOLO tattoo. And now we got this whole fleek thing. Now, you mentioned the overuse of the word of say.
Say.
Was there any daddios in this?
No, actually, which is really weird, as them Hepcats might have, or maybe that era predated this one.
Well, that was also not as more, I guess, the beatnik sort of slang.
Yeah, I think so.
This is the hot rod culture. So, yeah.
And it, but it just puts into perspective just how how society has changed so drastically in the period of half of a lifetime, which is essentially what this is, to the point where this was the time of guardians. Someone who is taking care of a French exchange student. You have chaperones. You have a consistent theme in this film is whether the missing Pat and Liz couple has actually gone to elope, and that's one. And the parents actually get involved, and they say, "Oh no, these are not. These are upstanding kids. They've been dating for a year, but they're not." Going to elope, and it's just so interesting culturally to get a window on this kind of lifestyle where the only way you could get close with your best gal,
besides making out
at makeout point, is to go to like a drive-in or a sock hop or like a soda shop or a malt shop and get close to your gal and put on like a tune on the jukebox. Yes. It's just completely different from we can comprehend now.
If you want to go all the way, you got to elope. You got to get married. So yeah definitely a window into a bygone era. So that's, I think, a pretty fair assessment as far as what we've learned. So what would you give the giant Gila monster?
Oh, my God. Well, I was really in the mood for a pure monster movie.
Yeah, I wanted more of like a King Kong or Godzilla or something.
Yeah, but anything with verses in the title, Godzilla versus
Mothra. Something. Yeah, we'll save that for future podcasts.
Yeah, it was interesting to see just because of the economics of this type of film. Movies are often disparaged as B pictures, but this was quintessentially a B picture.
Designed more like a C or a D picture.
Yeah, designed to complement a legitimate movie, because I think the budget on this was under like several hundred thousand dollars.
This was meant to accompany the Killer Crew, so it was actually Kellogg making two movies.
Oh, so it was a C movie,
really? To accompany each other. So he was making a B movie and a C movie. So yeah, this was definitely, what was the budget on this movie?
Yeah, I think under a couple hundred thousand dollars. So they're
couldn't be in 50s money.
Well, maybe even less, but there's again, no a different kind of system. The producer was a guy who ran a bunch of, I think, local drive-ins or something. So he was trying to tie in this to what we would call in modern-day business speak synergy to try and tap into his local market. But yeah, again, just a bygone era, just a fascinating glimpse into how teenagers interacted at the time.
Yeah, and as you mentioned that, I mean, there was a lot of synergy because this this DJ, this king of the DJs, was an actual DJ in the Texas town where filmed this movie. He was actually the predominant, I guess he would be their version of Alan Freed, who was one of the top...
Who coined the term rock and roll,
and was also implicated in the whole Payola scandal back in the day. And
I guess he's the reason, if I'm not mistaken, why the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is in Cleveland as opposed to somewhere where rock and roll may have originated. Mm-hmm. Just because he was a DJ and happened to be associated with Ohio. I think that's what happened, but yeah, it's interesting how things work out. Or how things didn't work out, because the actor who played Chase Winstead really took an extended hiatus and didn't really work in the business for much longer. And if I'm not mistaken, became some kind of hair care product, Empresario.
And well, he did have good hair in this movie.
He did, yeah, like for Vidal Sassoon and other things, but it just, you can't... It was a commercial enterprise at the time, as is now. You're trying to make a buck and control costs and try and, you know, inflate your box office by putting a hot commodity in your film. And honestly, and geez, I wish we got the guy's name right. I want to say it's Dan Sullivan, but I think it's wrong. Our listeners can Google him, but very, very charismatic, kind of charming guy. Even when he was singing these awful songs about mushrooms and laughing children, there's something about him. Like, he carried the movie in a way that he could have been a star, and he was designed to be the next matinee idol, and he never turned out to be that way, but them's the breaks.
Such is the vagaries of Hollywood.
Exactly, yeah.
So, star rating for the giant Gila monster.
Well, yeah, just for, say, enthusiastic filmmaking, trying to make a buck, depiction of youth culture at the time, accurately, I would say, how small town teens entertain themselves, probably very accurately. I'm going to give it a 2. Yeah, had its moments.
Yep, I concur. 2 stars. Mm. Yep, it's not it's not going to blow you away, but it's a fun time waster. So 2 stars, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And be sure to check out our 4-star, if not 5, website, which reviews genre films of all stripes from the 60s to today. And, well, I should say, pre-60s, because we're talking about this movie here. Mm. Reallyawfulmovies.com. Follow us on Twitter, awful_movies. If you have any bona fide monster movie you'd like us to discuss, we'll try and get that on the show soon. Email us reallyawfulmovies@gmail.com, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.